Hello and welcome to Swiss Info's program for June 14th. I'm Susan Masika. Here are a couple of questions for you to consider. English isn't one of Switzerland's national languages, so does it make sense for the administration to translate Swiss laws into English? And what's better, e-books or paper versions? This week, the focus is words, in print and electronic form, and in several languages. First stop, the Federal Chancellery, which coordinates the government's communications. It has to make sure that the information provided by the administration respects the multilingual nature of Switzerland. Around the corner from the Parliament building in Bern, the Chancellery employs 77 language experts to provide materials in the national languages, which include German, French, Italian, and Romansh. And they also do it in English. Stephen Frost is in charge of the English Language Service. He told me that the five-person team shares office space with the other language services.
Yeah, if you go to coffee, what's good with this section is that it's a real mix. You can go down there and then there'll be conversations going on in, you'll have then French or English dominating, German, depending on the day that you come in, one or other of the languages may be present. And it basically makes for an interesting environment because you're not just hearing one language all the time. And it can cut across. It's a bit like, not Babel, because the idea that would be you don't understand it, but here I don't speak Italian, but my understanding at least is better than it would be. In the meeting that we had today, one of the colleagues, she always speaks Italian, exercises her fair rights to speak Italian in meetings and does so, and that's good for everybody because they can get used to hearing their language even if you don't understand it. De facto, you'll get to understand more the more you hear of it. That's just a fact, because especially if everyone here already speaks French and German by default anyway. That's one of the requirements anyway. You have at least two languages.
We drop in on Philippa Herney-Bainbridge, who's planning her workload for the afternoon. I ask her how assignments are made.
Well, all the jobs that come in are logged in a central place where we can go and have a look to see what needs doing. Sometimes Stephen will rush in and say, please, could you do this? But generally, we know what the deadlines are. I quite like big projects myself. For instance, a newsletter that comes in every couple of months, or reports that come in. I prefer that to the smaller things. I find it quite stressful if you do six or seven small jobs in one day, because translating a paragraph, that's not the only work. You've got to do all the recording of it in the system and sending the emails and recording the fact that you've sent the email, etc., etc. Takes time.
The topic switches as well. If it comes in, you've got one thing, culture, the next thing's economic affairs, and then some legislation, the next one. You have to be fairly mentally agile to jump around and switch subjects like that.
Because English isn't one of Switzerland's national languages, some people question the need for documentation in that language. Ken McKenzie, another team member, explains.
Many people might say, why do you need these laws in English? Which is not always an easy question to answer. But basically, Switzerland has to deal with countries outside Switzerland, and that means that they have to have some sort of lingua franca, and often they use English for this. And we find that certain offices or departments are particularly keen to have English translations. The environment is one area where there are a lot of translations, which is interesting because of the debate in Britain now about Europe. There seems to be a general consensus that when it comes to the environment, different countries have to cooperate because it can't be done on a national scale. And so Switzerland shows this perhaps to a certain way by having all its laws translated into English, or many of them.
And when they're not busy translating things like legislation, press releases, and speeches, they take time to work on their style guide. Corinne Dill told me how they go about that, in particular, how they decide what to call things.
It's an ongoing process. It's ever since we started, it's been one of our goals to have consistency throughout for the terminology and concepts. And of course, departments change as well, as does technology. So there, some terms need to be updated, but we always, already within our group, we'll discuss, if we find something is inappropriate or that needs to be updated or that needs to be translated, we'll discuss this amongst ourselves, and then also with the specialists of, you know, that said department, and try to find the best solution possible. And then it goes into the government database, TermDAT, and these are also some things that will be included in our style guide.
As she mentioned, TermDAT is an online database full of terminology that relates to Switzerland's national interests. It has more than 400,000 entries in 17 languages. I asked section head Adrian Wiemann to describe the target audience.
Well, it used to be exclusively for the administration. You could only access it if you worked within the administration. And since March of last year, 2013, it's public. It's on the internet. All you need is a browser. You go to termdat.ch. See, I'm selling it to you right now. So anybody can look it up. And I think that is the idea. Obviously, our main audience is translators who are looking for equivalents. But we actually do get feedback from members of the public who tell us, I just stumbled across this Turn That Thing of yours, and wow.
If you want to see for yourself, check it out at termdat.ch. That's termdat.ch. One person who might find TermDAT useful is Susie Levine, the new American ambassador to Switzerland and Liechtenstein. She took office in Bern in June. At her swearing-in ceremony, she took a hands-on approach to innovation. Rather than resting her hand on a book, she used her e-reader. It was the first time a U.S. diplomat took the oath of office on an electronic device.
I chose to be sworn in over an electronic version of the U.S. Constitution on the e-reader that you'll see, and it was turned to the 19th Amendment, the amendment guaranteeing a woman's right to vote. Because, frankly, the U.S. Constitution transcends paper. It's ideas. It's not a document.
Shortly after she got to Switzerland, Levine donated her Amazon Kindle to the Museum for Communication in Bern. There she gave three more reasons why she used her e-reader in the ceremony with U.S. President Joe Biden.
One, it was what I had. Two, and they made me promise not to clean it before handing it to you, so I'm sorry in advance about that. And you actually have my reading list on there right now, so you might have to come back and copy that down. As cool as a copy of the Constitution from the 18th century would have been, I wanted to use a copy that is from the 21st century and that reflects my passion for technology and my hope for the future. Most importantly, it symbolized for me the very best of my nation, especially around innovation, entrepreneurship, and the voice that each of us has in our democracy, and frankly, that the Swiss have in their democracy as well.
In the U.S., e-books have a 25% share of the book market. In Switzerland, it's only about 5%. Swissinfo's Joe Fay has been looking into why e-books haven't really taken off in Switzerland. She and I visited Stauffacher, a six-story bookstore in Bern. First, we had a browse on the English floor, where Joe told me about her reading habits.
I read a lot of kind of crime and thrillers by the same author. And once you have about five of them at home already, you do get to the point where you think, maybe I could just buy five or so more on my tablet rather than keep adding to my collection with the same kind of book.
So they take up a lot of space, don't they?
They do, yeah. But when you have a kind of quite individual, unique book, I think you really want to buy that because then you have the potential to lend that out to someone else. So it's nice to have something that's quite special as an actual physical book, so you can pass it on or go back to it later. But if it's something that's, you know, one in a series of 20 or whatever, you don't really need to hang on to that forever, I don't think.
Well, I'm kind of a terrible customer because I like library books. You talk about lending things to people, I also love going to the library, and of course the sales aren't too good from that, but what I go for are the coffee table books. In fact, a purchase I made recently was this beautiful book, all of Pucci fashions, and it's wonderful to flip through that a few pages at a time. It weighs a ton. I have to keep it in a big drawer, but yeah, so for me, I think I make up for it when I buy these big, pricey books.
Yeah, it's a combination, really. I'm not so much into the kind of coffee table books even, but even if you're really looking forward to a new release from an author and it comes in hardback first, you know, there's quite a big temptation there to buy it as in an ebook format instead, because if you're commuting on the train every day like I do, you don't want to carry a laptop, a tablet, and a big heavy book as well. So although I wasn't sure about reading things on a tablet at first, I have been slightly converted, I think, but I don't know, there's a potential I might come back to paperbacks.
Then we met Johanna Jutzit, who manages the English bookshop at Stauffacher. She told us why she thinks the ebook is less popular here than it is abroad.
Well, for one thing, I think that the movement that we've seen in the US for the last few years has only just started now. However, I think the other thing is that with all these new technologies and these new possibilities, people are excited by this, interested by it, but they also still are, I hope, more excited about actual books and about, you know, touching, feeling, smelling, whatever. We have a lot of customers who've sort of gone to ebooks and then come back and say, well, we read certain things in ebooks, but we still prefer if you're reading in the bathtub or if you're reading while you're waiting for the bus or whatnot. It's an electronical device, and we're, I think, surrounded by so many electronical devices that a lot of people feel that when reading, they actually prefer to have just paper.
What do you know about what's going on downstairs? You do have an e-books sort of kiosk downstairs. How's that going?
It's going pretty well. It's steadily growing. However, I have to say it's not the most profitable thing we have here in this shop. But we try to make sure that customers see that we also offer e-books. And what we offer additionally that no online shop offers is we offer great customer service and also the tech support that my colleagues offer downstairs is pretty amazing. It's, as I said, it's growing. It's not a huge thing yet, but I think it's very important that we make sure that customers know that they can come here for regular books, old-fashioned books, but they can also come here for ebooks. And yeah, our experts can help them with that.
Something that seemed to be really important to me when I was looking into this story was that as a book lover myself, I love going into bookshops and browsing through and seeing the selections that people in the bookshop have made. But something that really makes a difference when you're living abroad, I think, is that English books do cost quite a lot to buy as a physical paper item, whereas if you buy them as an ebook, they can be maybe a quarter of the price. Is that maybe a worrying factor for people like you working in a bookshop?
It's always been the case that English books were slightly more expensive in Switzerland, given that we have to import them, etc. However, I think people who still come to bookshops come here mostly to browse and to have us, the staff, recommend things and that we know what we're selling. And that's one thing. The other thing I think is we've also tried to make sure that the books that we sell, a lot of them, we're going more for beautiful books, books that we still sell, you know, all the crime and thriller bestsellers that there are, but we try to give that something extra that you just cannot get if you have a digital copy of a book.
It seems they're managing to do that. The shop had just opened for the day, but there were already some customers making purchases. Visit us at swissinfo.ch for more on these and other stories. And that's all we have time for this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Susan Masika in Bern.